This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
It's all confidential. You'll only see what you'll see one person if you need to be referred to somebody else. It's all kept, as Nikki says, within the clinic. Your GP, your family, nobody needs to know. You can be underage. So if you're kind of 14, 15, 16, they will still see you. As long as you are showing the maturity that what you're doing is safe, it won't go anywhere else. It will just be kept within the clinics.
Welcome to Dr. Nikki Explains. I'm Dr. Nikki, a GP of 24 years' experience, and this is my friend Sarah.
I'm a mum of four with no medical background.
We've decided to do a podcast to explain medical conditions, hopefully in an accessible way. We often have a guest speaker who has experience or expertise.
The podcast is not a substitute for seeing your GP. If you have medical symptoms that are troubling you, please see a doctor.
We've based the podcasts on NICE guidelines, which is the National Institute for Clinical Excellence.
The podcasts do contain graphic descriptions of medical conditions and may not be suitable for a younger audience or those of a sensitive nature.
Thank you for listening.
Hello. Today we're going to discuss sexual health, and we have a guest speaker with us today called Amanda. And Amanda, you are one of our fantastic, very experienced senior practice nurses, and you've had some experience with sexual health, is that right?
Yes, I worked for 10 years within a sexual health clinic, running clinics, contraception and sexual health, so I saw quite a lot then. However, now I'm just doing practice nursing, but we do still see it occasionally, but certainly not as much as we used to in the sexual health clinics.
And I'm Dr. Nikki.
And I'm Sarah. Can we start off with what sort of symptoms someone might have if they suspected that they had a sexually transmitted disease, Amanda?
It's quite difficult because quite a few of the conditions don't actually have very clear symptoms. Symptoms are usually more common in women. And it would usually be a presentation of a nasty discharge, discomfort down below. Men do get discharge as well in some of the infections, but quite a few of the infections actually have very few symptoms. So it's difficult to always know. Your periods may be different. You may get breakthrough bleeding, various symptoms like that, really.
I mean, men can get groin pain. They can get something called prostatitis, which, you know, isn't something you would know you had, but it's this dull ache in the groin, kind of deep in. You can get pain on weeing, pain on intercourse. And obviously, it's an infection like genital warts, you would get warts. You'd actually see them. So those are some of the male symptoms.
What about itchiness? Can that be a symptom?
It can be. It's usually itchiness is more common with something like thrush, which is not, it's not actually a sexually transmitted infection. And obviously is more common with women than it is with men. Men don't usually present with an itchiness.
The other thing you might present with is an ulcer. So if you've got a sort of weird ulcer in the genital area, that could well be a sexual infection.
Or a blister.
Or a blister.
Blister's a classic one for a herpes infection. Very painful blisters.
So perhaps could you talk us through some of the more common STDs that you come across?
The most common one probably at the moment is chlamydia, and that's sexually transmitted. But in that, 80% of girls have no symptoms, 50% of blokes have no symptoms.
Talking of chlamydia, what is the problem? I mean, what symptoms is someone going to be seeing?
If you do get symptoms, and that's usually once you've got it, when you first get it, you wouldn't get symptoms, but then you get, it could be uncomfortable having sexual intercourse. Women can get breakthrough bleeding. Some men will get a slight discharge from their penis. A woman, often the discharge is very minor, and because it's up inside, they wouldn't notice it. So that's why we tend to just screen people. Any new partner, we always recommend that you should get screening. And as I said, the screening is free. You can order it online and the results get sent to you. And then treatment's very easy. If you're not treated, the worry is it can cause infertility in both men and women, which is why we're keen to do it. And it can lead on to more problems if it's not treated.
Another complication is ectopic pregnancy in women. Because it can affect the tubes. So it can also cause an arthritis in men and women, but these are sort of rarer things and later stages. But as Amanda said, it's really important to pick it up early on because it's easy to treat.
Any others that you see very commonly?
I suppose one of the other common ones that people often are scared to present with is herpes. That's again, sexually transmitted, but you can get it from close skin contact. And the problem with that one, seems to be a taboo about talking about it. It feels like it's a dirty infection, but it's not. It's very common. And there, people present with that can be really painful, nasty blisters, usually worse with the first presentation. But the problem with herpes is a virus, so it can reoccur. It's not a one-off treatment. Once you have the herpes virus, you will then have it potentially for life, but symptoms get less the longer that you have it.
Am I right in thinking that it's some way related to cold sores?
Yes.
There's two herpes viruses, one that affects the lips and your kind of mouth area, and one that affects the genital area. So they are actually different subtypes of the herpes simplex virus. I do see reasonably frequently young women presenting with the herpes for the first time. And I just thought we ought to just quickly talk about that, because it's basically what happens is it's very, very painful in the genital area. There are, as Amanda says, maybe 40, 50 ulcers all over the genital area in women particularly. Obviously, it can affect men. And it's hard to wee. It's hard to sit down. People don't really know what's going on. They think they've got some weird kind of thrush. Quite often they'll come in and they don't realise that they've got a lot of ulcers in the genital area. And we would counsel things like try warm saline baths. That gives people a bit of relief. The lesions usually last a bit like chicken pox, up to a week to 10 days before they start to scab over and heal up. So it is going to be uncomfortable for that time period. It will heal and it will get better.
Creams? Can you put a cream on? Or
they don't normally treat it with cream like you would herpes on your face, not genitally, but you can get treatment. And if you need it, you get tablet treatments, an antiviral that you need to take as soon as possible. And that should stop the breakout getting worse. And once you've had it once, you can be put on medication to stop it occurring again if it looks like you're going to be one of the unlucky people that get it regularly. And it would start presenting with tingling, burning sensation. And then you would start taking the antiviral straight away. But some people have a one-off episode that can be really severe and then actually have it very almost not noticing it in other times, which is why it's very difficult to know whether you're passing it on to someone, because what happens is you can get a second episode could be a tiny little break in the skin that you don't actually notice, and then you shed the virus, and that's when you can pass it on to a partner. Is you don't have blisters and you can say, I've got no blisters, but actually without realizing you had a very small spot and the virus is then shed and you pass it on to somebody else. So it's very difficult to find out where you got it, when you got it. If you've been with a partner for a long time, they could have had it without ever presenting it with a big, severe outbreak. So it is difficult.
Ms. Amanda, one of the questions I get as a GP sometimes is, in a young girl I saw, for example, a couple of weeks ago, was that she'd had a partner for a long time, maybe 5-6 years. But before that, she'd had a partner that had been unfaithful. And she wondered if the herpes had come from her current boyfriend or the one before.
Again, you could never know for sure. The first outbreak is usually the worst, and that's usually with a contact between 2 and 10 days. So if you have a really bad outbreak, the chances are it's come from someone recent, but you can never be sure.
It could be a recurrence.
It could be a recurrence. And the other thing to say, that if ever you do get the blisters, you really need to get a diagnosis, which is a swab, and you get those from usually from the GU clinics, because once you've got a diagnosis, then if you get the symptoms, which could be tingling, you can say, I have herpes, I'm getting the symptoms, and then they can issue the medication very quickly. But if you don't have a proper diagnosis and you say, I think I've got herpes, you're unlikely to get the treatment. So it's really important, if you ever have blisters or sores like that, is to go, and ideally to a GU clinic. Unfortunately, at the GP surgeries, our swabs, they have very short shelf lives, so we don't usually keep them in stock, because you never know when you're going to get them.
If you don't treat herpes, I mean, presumably it's incredibly uncomfortable. Are there any problems if you don't treat it?
No, in the idea with the treatment is it shortens the progression of the viral infection. But if we always say you can, if it's really painful, you can put a local anaesthetic gel on the area, as Nikki said, warm baths, anything to soothe it. You can get a temperature and feel, the first cases often feel really unwell, like a flu-like symptom, and then it's just managing that.
There is one scenario which is dangerous with genital herpes, and that's being pregnant. If you are pregnant with genital genital herpes, there is a chance your baby could get a serious infection, which is called neonatal herpes. So it's really important that you don't, that if you do get herpes during pregnancy, that you get urgent treatment for it.
So we've been through chlamydia and herpes. I imagine warts?
Yes, warts again is very common. And there are lots of different wart viruses. And you know, it's the warts that you get genitally are the same principle as the warts you get on your hands, but it comes from a different virus. It's skin contact. It's what they're now vaccinating the young boys and girls against. I think in year 12 and 13, the HPV, human papillomavirus, and that is hopefully reducing the incidence of getting genital warts. And again, you won't always see them, so you don't know. A girl can have them up inside in her vagina, so would never know she'd got them, but could pass them on to a boy. And in those situations, a boy is much more likely to see them because it's easier for them to see their penis than to see inside your up inside the vagina. Girls can get them on the labia. That's also common. And again, they can be treated. It's a virus, so it will come and it goes. And treatment is usually, they do something called cryotherapy when they burn them, and you get that done at the GU clinics.
There's two strains, again, as Amanda said, there's two strains of HPV virus that commonly cause genital warts. And it's type 6 and 11, and they cause 90% of genital warts. And as Amanda says, it's really important to encourage vaccination. So if you're a young person listening, or if you're a parent of a young person, then we would strongly encourage you to get the genital wart vaccine. It not only stops genital warts, but some of these HPV viruses are also linked to cervical cancer. We are hoping that with the HPV vaccination program that we can pretty much hopefully even eliminate cervical cancer, but certainly hugely reduce the chances of you getting cervical cancer, because these wart viruses are linked to that.
And the vaccine is all given through schools. It's all done as a school program. So that's the best place to get it. So when the boys and girls at school, it will be part of their program. So, you know, don't make...
I know it's certainly been a part of children's program.
There's one more thing to say about genital warts. Well, there's probably a few more things to say, but one of the things I'm thinking is that very occasionally you see multiple warts, sort of like a cauliflower growth, or there's a real issue with the warts. And as a doctor or as a nurse, you would think, is this person immunocompromised? Have they got a problem with their immune system? And it would cross your mind that they might need some further testing if they have a problem with lots and lots of warts. I mean, we might know that they're immunocompromised because they might be on medicines to suppress their immune system for some other medical condition. But these people are particularly prone to multiple warts, and it's a particular problem to treat in these people.
Just to be clear, if you had a wart on your finger and then you touch someone's genitals, that wouldn't pass on?
No.
That's a very different virus.
The herpes virus, the herpes 1 and 2 can be on your face and genitally, but the wart is a different virus. And it's not a problem. It doesn't, you know, it's just unsightly and it can pass, but it's not a big problem and it can be treated.
Whenever you hear of something, you know, sexually transmitted diseases, you think of the sort of big ones like gonorrhea and...
Trichomonas is another one, TV. They are around. I mean, gonorrhea is quite common, and that gives a very nasty discharge, and it's sexually transmitted. And again, we would always recommend with those that you went to the GU clinics, because they would do contact tracing, which means if someone presents with gonorrhea, you would contact anyone that they had slept with. And it can all be done anonymously. It doesn't mean that you have to say who you slept with. They can do it, but everyone needs to be treated because it's a nasty infection with, and it's two lots of antibiotics that you need. And Trichomonas TV is another one.
Trichomonas tends to present with discharge and pain in weeing, and it affects the vagina, affects the urinary tract, sometimes the bladder, and it's the second most common cause of vaginal discharge after thrush, and is more common in Afro-Caribbeans than in the white population. But it's another one that's reasonably common and gets sent to the GU clinic to be treated. So I think what we're coming up with are some of these infections are transmitted by penetrative sex. So things like chlamydia, gonorrhea, trichomonas are contact. They're transferred really by penetrative sex, whereas herpes and warts that we've discussed so far can be transmitted by penetrative sex, but also just by skin-to-skin contact. There are some other common infections. I mean, obviously, thrush is extremely common. We see that a lot. That is another one that although it can be sexually transmitted, it often isn't. You can get thrush after a batch of antibiotics, for example. You can be a bit more prone to thrush if you've got diabetes. And again, if you're immunocompromised, you can get thrush.
For those who haven't had thrush,
again,
could you give us the symptoms?
Classic is an itchy, it can hurt when you pee, an itchy discharge, often a white cottage cheese sort of discharge is how people describe it. And it's much more common in women just because it's a yeast infection. So it likes somewhere warm and damp to multiply. So that's why it's more common in women. Men can get it, but obviously it's not going to thrive on the end of a penis like it would inside a vaginal wall.
Now, when I was growing up, my mum used to say, don't wear tight trousers or nylon pants because it'll give you thrush.
Again, well, it's hot and sweaty, probably where it comes from.
Right.
And the other one that you can get is called BV, bacterial vaginosis, which again, it's not sexually transmitted. And that's where you can get a very nasty discharge and some
smelly.
Very smelly. And some people are much more prone to it, like thrush. Some people are more prone to it than others. The BV is to do with a change in the pH within your vaginal, in your vagina. So some people will get it if they change partners, and it doesn't mean they've got a sexually transmitted infection. The male sperm can change the pH within a vagina walls. So then they get a discharge. So it's not a sexually transmitted infection in the same way. It's just a change in the pH. Some people, when they have a coil fitted, it can change the pH slightly. And again, it's treatment. You get antibiotic treatment or you change the pH back and it gets the balance, sorts itself out. But the classic one then is because, as Nikki said, it can be quite a smelly discharge, is women overwash, keep washing and douching and things like that, which you're just upsetting the pH within your natural pH within your vagina. So don't wash massive soap and just use water and wash once a day. Don't douche. Don't wear tight nylon knickers.
So thanks, Mum, for that advice.
Scabies, we haven't mentioned.
Scabies, yes.
This is a little mite. Very, very itchy is the kind of main features. You can get scabies anywhere on your skin. The classic place is actually between your fingers. You can sometimes see a little burrow on your hands and really anywhere on your body. And by close skin-to-skin contact, again, it can be sexually transmitted.
So why, if scabies can be all over your body, why has that got a sort of dirty feel to it?
You get it in the in your sheets and things like that. I think that's where it will be passed through. I wouldn't say it was a sexually transmitted infection, but people come because they're itchy. And often you don't notice if it's kind of down between your legs or in your groin area. A bit like if you've got crabs, lice, it knits, that sort of thing, in the groin area. Again, I mean, I think now people are much more aware of their genital area than they ever used to be. And with a lot of girls being clean and boys being clean shaven, things are much more obvious than they ever used to be, which they didn't, you know, many years ago, they wouldn't have seen because they were pubic hair.
So symptoms of scabies?
Itchy.
Just itchy?
Yeah.
Do you get any?
Yeah, sort of rash.
Yeah, so a little red, which is little dots of redness underneath the skin, and you can feel it's like it is a little mite under the skin.
And what happens if you don't treat that?
Just get spreads.
Yeah.
But the treatment is a wash all over. You shower and you have to change all your bed linen. It is quite a palaver to get rid of. And obviously anyone slept in your bed and all that sort of thing, and it could be on your clothes. So there is, but it is manageable and it's not going to do you any harm other than make you very itchy.
Thanks for running through all those symptoms. If you are worried that you might have some of these symptoms, I mean, where do you go? I mean, I'm guessing that you know, it's quite embarrassing.
Yes.
Well, it can be.
It can be very embarrassing. And when you do go to one of the clinics, they do ask you some very embarrassing questions, but it's all getting the bigger picture. But the first port of call I would always say is you can get online, and in our area, Kent County Council provide an online STI check, which you can fill out a form on your computer. It gets sent off. You get the box sent to your home address. It's in an anonymous box. It doesn't say STI check all over it. And in there, you can do a vaginal swab for a girl for chlamydia and gonorrhea. The boys just pee in a pot. You can also do a finger prick test for HIV and syphilis. They're less common, but they are something that, again, everyone should be tested for. And that's carried. You can test that on a drop of blood. You then put it all back in the box. That gets sent to the STI, back to the clinics. And then they text you with the result. If everything's fine, you're clear. If they're not, they will then contact you. They can send out antibiotics. If you've got something like gonorrhea, HIV, or syphilis, then they would book you an appointment and you'd go to one of the local clinics.
Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And
so it is.
You know, I do hope that people listening will, you know, make relatives and children and friends aware of that, because that really is great.
So that's all free and online. But if you think you've got a discharge, or you've got blisters from a herpes, or you think that you've been sleeping with someone who you're not sure of their sexual history, then you can get, they do walk-in clinics, or you can book and phone an appointment, and you'll be seen there by a qualified nurse would see you. It feels hard going into a clinic, but they are very welcoming. They take a full history. And again, you might think some of the history is quite personal, but actually it's getting the picture of what they need to test you for.
And none of that goes on the GP record. So it's all completely confidential. We don't see any of that. So you can be absolutely guaranteed about your confidentiality. I did just want to mention HIV quickly. It's not something we see very commonly. And as we know, it's a virus that reduces your immune system, is really a very basic way of looking at it. And I wanted to mention it because things have changed in the world of HIV since the days when it was first emerging. There are very effective antiviral treatments now to treat it. And in addition, there's something called PrEP, which is really important that people know about. PrEP, what that stands for is pre-exposure prophylaxis. But what it basically means is it's a medicine taken to prevent you getting HIV. And it reduces the risk of getting HIV from sex by about 99%. And it reduces the risk of getting HIV from drug injection use by at least 74%. So what it means is that if you think there is a chance here that I might be engaging in some rather higher risk sex than I thought I might be, or I am an IV drug abuser and I want to reduce my risk of HIV, you can take PrEP and seriously reduce your chances of getting HIV.
But these are all given through the GU clinics?
Yes.
Not through the GU.
What does GU stand
Genital
for?
Genital urine. And the local one to us is called the Rubin Clinic. And they have clinics in the hospital, but they have satellite clinics. So you're not necessarily going into the hospital, and they're open 6 days a week, and it's all, you can find out the information online,
so you can just Google GU clinic.
And anyone who's at risk of anything, whether you're a gay guy that you've just started having penetrative sex, you might contact them, and they will give you, then they will cover everything, all the hepatitis vaccines, hepatitis A vaccine, hepatitis B vaccines. They will discuss PrEP and PEP, which are the HIV antiviral treatments. So it's all, they will push you in the right direction. So if you're really worried about an STI, to be honest, the best place is to go to one of those clinics. Obviously, your GP surgery is going to be in your local town and the GU clinic may not, but they are specialists in what they do.
And you can contact the GU clinics directly.
Yeah.
A really important thing to talk about is how do you protect yourself against, we've kind of touched base with a whole load of different GU infections. And I don't think today is necessarily about going through every single sexually transmitted infection there is, although we have kind of outed quite a few of them. but I think, you know, one thing to mention is condoms, really. If you wear a condom, you massively reduce your chances of getting sexually transmitted infection. Obviously, there is still going to be some skin-to-skin contact, so there's still some risk, but you will, massively reduce your chances. And you can get condoms for free from various sites.
Yes, locally to us, it's Get It, and they will provide free condoms. So you don't need to pay them. They are expensive if you have to buy them. And then the other thing is, obviously, any new partner, we'd always recommend that you use condoms until you know their sexual history. And to be what quite often what we recommend in the clinics is before you decide to stop using a condom, is you both go and get an STI, get screened. And if you've both got a clear test, you know you won't have the basic infections. You could have other things, but you wouldn't know about herpes. But you can't get tested for herpes, not in the UK. But you can get tested for chlamydia, gonorrhea, HIV and syphilis, which are all the ones that you want to be protected against. You can't get tested for warts either. But it's a start.
And don't forget the HPV vaccine as well to protect yourself.
One thing that occurred to me we haven't talked about is, are these infections mostly for younger people or any age?
That's a really good question.
Yes. And they can be younger people, mainly because younger people are usually sleeping with more people. So they're exposing themselves. Every time you sleep with someone new, you're exposing yourself to the risk of an infection. So it is more common. Having said that, then women and men who then marriages break up in their 40s often have never used a condom and they're then in a new situation. And so it's almost like an alien thing to say, I need you to use a condom. So there is a higher instance of STIs again in women who and men who have been married and come out and then are on the dating scene, online dating. So there is a higher incidence then with those people as well. So, yeah. And the principle is exactly the same. Any new partner, use a condom and do the STI checking, which is free for everybody.
Amanda, what happens when you go to a clinic? Having been a nurse in a clinic that 10 years, you could reassure.
So when you arrive, you're given a whole load of paperwork that you have to fill out. You will then see a nurse who will go through and they will ask personal questions, who you slept with, what sort of sex you've had. And you may be embarrassed to admit that you've had anal sex, oral sex or whatever. They will have heard everything that you have told them, so you won't be don't feel embarrassed. But the whole point is we need to know what sort of sex you've had so that we can do the right tests to look and see what infections it could be. They will ask all about contraception. They do cover contraception at the clinic, so they will cover that as well. So it's just, and then it's all confidential. You'll only see what you'll see one person. If you need to be referred to somebody else, it's all kept, as Nikki says, within the clinic. Your GP, your family, nobody needs to know. You can be underage. So if you're kind of 14, 15, 16, they will still see you. As long as you are showing the maturity that what you're doing is safe, it won't go anywhere else. It will just be kept within the clinics.
And they'll take some swabs, presumably.
They'll do vaginal swabs. They will take blood. They'll do, if you're a man, they will do, you pee in a pot.
And so we talked a little bit about being mature and going to a GU clinic and being seen on your own without, you know, your mum, if you don't want to let your mum know. And there is something called Gillick competence, isn't there, whereby, and I think that's really what you were alluding to there. And without really sort of going into the fine details of it, it's around a case where a mother was angry that her young daughter went to a GP and asked for contraception without her knowledge. And it was deemed in the High Court that you can go without your mother if you are Gillick competent. In other words, if you're mature enough to understand the consequences of your actions, then that's fine. So we would be able to see boys and girls under the age of 16, providing that they were mature enough and they understood what was going on around them. And, you know, there's some tests we can do to assess maturity.
So if you're worried about anything, far better to go and see someone.
And go, if your GP is your local person, your GP will not tell anyone. Your GP will not tell your mother that they have seen you. It is completely confidential. But the worry with the GP is you walk in there and you may see a neighbour sitting in there and they may then say, so that's the worry. But a GP is equally, if you can't get to a GU clinic, go and see your GP. You know, it's...
And your neighbour's not going to know you're there for a genital infection.
No.
You could be there for a cough. So it's all completely confidential. As far as how we treat all the different infections, it's all a bit different depending on what they all are. I think we've kind of touched base with a few of them. Some of them are treated with antibiotics. Some of them, like the warts, are treated directly with something that you paint on. Some are treated with antivirals. And so they've all got slightly different ways of treating them. But that you'd be taken through one of those when you went to the clinic.
And they are all treatable. Everything is treatable. The only one that can recur is the herpes. But the others, once you've treated, and obviously HIV, but the others, once you've had treatment and you've had and it's cured, it's gone.
To reassure people, I mean, how common is it to have a sexually transmitted disease?
Statistically, I think for chlamydia, 1 in 10 16 to 24-year-olds have chlamydia. So I normally say to the girls in the class, you know, if you're in a school, that in a class of 30, there's possibly 3 children, young people sitting there who have chlamydia and may not know it. So it is quite common.
Mm. So in 2022, apparently there were 392,453 STIs reported in the UK, which was a 24% rise on the previous year. So they are, I mean, I think a lot of the data shows that there is an increase in incidence of some of these, which is why I think that there's a need for knowledge and a need to understand what's out there, you know, what you can do about it, how you can treat it and how you can protect yourself.
And I think also remembering that quite a few of the infections, not everybody gets symptoms. So you may meet a new partner and they say, oh, I'm clear. But actually, you don't necessarily know, because they may be carrying the infection but without having symptoms. So not everything has symptoms. So that's why it's important to get tested.
And I was going to ask Amanda whether there are any useful websites, charities or places people can go to get information.
I guess around here, the KCC, Kent County Council, do all the online you can get access through them, the free testing. There are obviously the Rubin Clinic in Maidstone Hospital, but they have them in they have a clinic in Tunbridge Wells as well. Get It, do the free condoms.
Obviously, we've got people listening from East Kent as well. And there will be GU clinics in that area.
Yeah.
And from other areas of Kent, North Kent, etc.
But I think the Rubin Clinic, they are clinics up in Gravesend and Dartford, and there will be clinics.
Yes.
But I think it's a case of looking online locally for sexual health. And everything is free. That's the main thing. If someone says you have to pay for a chlamydia test, find somewhere else. You shouldn't pay for it. It's all free.
Which is excellent. Good on NHS, eh?
Yep.
Okay, so I think we are nearly at the end. And what I wondered, Amanda, and what we tend to ask our guest speakers is if there's one piece of advice that you'd like to give our listeners today, what would it be?
Any new partner, wear a condom. I think would be my most, yes, wear condoms. You can't go wrong with a condom.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I really, really hope this helps reassure people that their symptoms are not unusual.
And that it's not a frightening place to go to.
Yeah. Nick.
We hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast. Don't forget that if this has made you aware of troubling medical symptoms, you may need to see your GP.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.